Tune in every Thursday from 11 p.m. till midnight for Copy and Paste with your host, Tim, a.k.a. Autonomy, the very best in underground dance music.
Good afternoon. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. I am coming to you from the studio, and it is 8:37 p.m. Sorry, 9:37 p.m. Friday evening. So I'm doing this ahead of time because I work during my time slot. Welcome to the show. And I was going to read off a bunch of topics, little news topics on astronomy, but what's happening on Earth here is much more interesting. Donald Trump has been indicted, so he's going to be arrested next week. And then the lawsuit that Dominion made against Fox News, saying they defamed them when they criticized their voting machinery. The judge found overwhelming evidence that, yes, it could happen, and Fox is going to go to trial with this, and that's a big blow to Fox and a great coup for Dominion Security or Dominion voting machines. So we are the only species in the universe, I think. But if there are other ones, I'm wondering if they vote, if they even have the intelligence to cast a vote, or are they the same type of creatures like the Borg that was on Star Trek with Luc Picard, Captain Jean-Luc Picard? So Trump's going to go to, I think, trial, maybe. But anyway, he's going to be arrested and charged, I think. So what's happening on Earth is really very interesting, at least to me. And if an alien was looking down on us, they'd think, okay, what are you guys doing worrying about voting? Because do they vote? Okay, so the headline is, a judge just delivered a crushing blow to Fox News in Dominion's defamation lawsuit. And this is an interesting topic for me. And I can say, well, or anybody can say, it's not related to astronomy. But in a way it is, because Earth is here. We are part of the universe. So anything to do with us has to do with astronomy, or maybe it doesn't. But anyway, welcome to the show. I was thinking the other day about what I used to do as in my show many years ago, and what I did on my website. I just quickly went through like a rundown of the headlines. So I'm thinking, why not do that now? So what I'm going to do now is go through a rundown of the major headlines in astronomy. And what I'm going to do for this, I was looking at NASA.gov, but I'm going to try Live Science if it ever comes to life. There we go. So here's Live Science. And some of the other stories on Live Science can be so interesting as well. And here's a story about Einstein, so it's about physics. Newly discovered Einstein tile is a 13-sided shape that solves a decades-old math problem. Well, good for them. And also it says here, James Webb's telescope detects light from a small Earth-like planet and finds it's missing its atmosphere. Ooh, wow. But anyway, let's quickly look at this thing about the tile. So I saw that as a 13-sided shape, and I don't know how you can justify it being a shape, because anybody can arbitrarily take a shape and say, okay, draw a 15-sided shape and say this is a shape. But for some reason, it fits together like a puzzle with certain holes in it, and I will not go in this article because I don't care too much for it. So that's one good thing about coming here. When I do my show, I can decide one day, okay, I'm going to go to NASA.gov or LiveScience.com or Space.com. So I have total freedom, and I like it that way because I don't know what I'm going to be doing. And then a lot of the things are surprise to me, so it's very genuine. And here's Stephen Hawking, Stephen Hawking's famous black hole paradox may finally have a solution. Another topic is, what is the moon phase today? I used to know that years ago, but I don't know it anymore. I forgot it. Here's another headline. Object mistaken as a galaxy is actually a black hole pointed directly at Earth. Now that sounds scary. An object once thought to be a radio galaxy is actually an active black hole that changed angles to point directly at Earth, new research suggests. So there is, I guess, a distance that if a black hole is beyond that distance, it will not pose a threat to Earth. But if it's inside that distance, it could pose a threat to Earth, as could a neutron star. So a neutron star could demagnify all our credit cards, and I think worse, they could affect the electrons in our cells and cause huge problems, and we die. So here's another one. Gargantuan black hole, 30 billion times the mass of the sun. It's one of the largest ever discovered. I talked about that a few weeks ago. Astronomers use gravitational lensing and supercomputers to identify the colossal black hole, which is among the largest ever found. So gravitational lensing was really big, I think, about 5 years ago. All of a sudden, it burst on the scene, and everybody was talking about it. And then it comes and goes. So these topics come and go. Brightest gamma ray burst ever detected detected defies explanation. So scientists are taking a closer look at the afterglow left by the brightest gamma ray burst ever detected or ever recorded, and what they see doesn't fit with any theoretical models. Great. Mysterious aurora-like phenomena, Steve, so that's STEVE, appears during strongest solar storm for more than half a decade. So Steve was spotted across the U.S. and in parts of the U.K. after the most powerful solar storm to hit Earth for 6 years smashed into our planet. So here's that story. Most powerful solar storm in 6 years caused auroras all over the U.S. and nobody saw it coming. I talked about that before. And here's another story. What are potentially hazardous asteroids? Potentially hazardous asteroids, or potentially hazardous objects, are large space rocks that orbit closely to Earth and could cause widespread damage to our planet. So here's a story about Ceres, a dwarf planet. How to watch Ceres, a dwarf planet. So that's Ceres, 14 times smaller than Pluto. Photobomb a spiral galaxy in the sky this weekend. So maybe I'll read that article because I would like to know how to do it. And the weather must cooperate, though. James Webb Space Telescope spots dust storm region on a giant planet nearly 20 times the size of Jupiter. So what I notice about these headlines is there's no talk about something. What do you know? I just put my foot in my mouth. The next article is. So I was going to say that there's no articles on observational astronomy, but it is. There is one. But before I get to that article, here's an article that says aliens could be hiding in terminator zones on planets with eternal night. Alien life could thrive in terminator zones, the edges between the light and dark sides of planets that are tidally locked with their host stars. So they are like the terminator on the moon is the line between light and dark. So that's a good place to look when you're looking for astronomy. So why don't I talk about this? This is a good article. Here's another one. Gigantic solar tornado taller than 14 Earths raged for 3 days. What caused it? A massive solar tornado recently towered over the sun's north pole for 3 days. The plasma twister was created by a rapidly rotating magnetic field. Okay, so why don't I go to this article first? Because I said there is no observational astronomy stories, and guess what? I just found one. So five planets and a crescent moon are about to line up in the night sky. Okay, so it says, don't miss views of Mercury, Jupiter, Venus, Uranus, Mars, and the moon after sunset from March 23rd to the 30th. And guess what? I just missed it. I missed that article because right now as I'm talking, it's March 31st. But I did see Venus and Jupiter together. And I saw Jupiter a lot. But let's read this. Why not? Even though it's past the time, even though I missed the bus or missed the boat, why not talking about the five planet alignment with the crescent moon? So I saw that. It was very beautiful. And it says here that Mercury, Jupiter, Venus, Uranus, and Mars, and the moon after sunset from March 23 to 30. So I've seen all those planets and stuff and the moon except for Mercury. I have not seen Mercury. So here's a nice picture of it. Oh, beautiful. Starting last week, you can watch five planets in the evening sky as a crescent moon rises higher each night. From Thursday, March 23rd through Thursday, March 30, it will be possible to see Mercury, Jupiter, Venus, Uranus, and Mars soon after sunset as a waxing crescent moon appears to make a tour of five planets. While Venus and Mars will be very easy to see, you may need to use stargazing binoculars or a telescope to find brightening Mercury and dimming Jupiter, and certainly to see Uranus, which is always just beyond naked eye visibility. So I have seen Uranus before with a telescope, and it was a little speck. You also need a low view of the western horizon, though light pollution makes little difference for planet spotting and moon gazing. So that's what I sometimes don't have from where I live. There is no low horizon. Planetary parade, what will happen? Over the 8 nights, Mercury and Jupiter will swap positions, with the former rising above the latter. So, with Jupiter rising above Mercury. But to see the switcheroo, you'll have to be outside, looking low to the western horizon immediately after sunset. Meanwhile, the moon will grow from 77% to 68% lit over the week, rising higher each night to visit a different planet. Throughout the week, Uranus will be above Venus to the west, and beyond it, Mars will shine brightly very high in the sky. What I do remember is sometimes in the summer you can go to the planetarium and you can look through the telescope, which is really fun. That's the first time I saw Mars was in that telescope. On Thursday, March 23rd, the crescent moon and Venus. On March 23rd, the view of a slim 7% lit crescent moon appearing to cup Venus will be jaw-dropping as it hangs just below bright Venus and above Jupiter in the western sky. Mercury will be beneath Jupiter but lost in the sun's glare. Aim some binoculars at the moon and you'll see Earthshine, which is sunlight reflected from Earth and back onto the lunar surface. Friday, March 24th, it's crescent moon and Uranus. 25th, Saturday, crescent moon and the Pleiades. Oh, that would have been nice to see. March 26th, the moon and Mars. March 27th, Jupiter-Mercury conjunction. That would have been nice. Tuesday, March 28th, Mercury rising. Wednesday, March 29th, Jupiter sinking. Thursday, March 30th, Venus-Uranus conjunction. So it's too bad I missed that. I hope somebody saw that. And here, another article just interrupted me. It says, alien mothership lurking in our solar system could be watching us with tiny probes. That is something to think about, but most of us won't think about it. So anyway, we just read this article. It's nothing spectacular. If I would have been able to know about this last week, I could have talked about it, but I didn't know, so I'm sorry. Didn't warn anybody. But I guess all these astronomy buffs were up on it and probably saw it. And one thing that when I went to an astronomy party, it was close to the U.S. border, and a lot of people brought out their big telescopes. I kind of envy those people. They probably have them in their backyard. They can easily access them and see some very beautiful thing because they let everybody move around and look through their telescopes. And I did see a big star cluster with millions of stars, and that was quite nice to see that. So here is this article, How to Watch Ceres, a dwarf planet 14 times smaller than Pluto, photobomb a spiral galaxy in the sky this weekend. And this was published 8 days ago, so I missed that too. Okay, I'll read it anyway. Watch live online as a dwarf planet Ceres swoops in front of the Grand Design Spiral Galaxy Messier 100 this weekend. This weekend, you can watch live as the first asteroid ever discovered passes across one of the night sky's most beautiful spiral galaxies. The Rome-based Virtual Telescope Project will host a live stream starting at 11 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Sunday, March 26th. And when Ceres will be visible in front of Messier 100 or M100, a stunning example of a grand design spiral galaxy, according to NASA, of course. Ceres is the largest object in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, according to NASA, and accounts for nearly a third of the asteroid belt's mass. Initially labeled an asteroid upon its discovery more than 200 years ago, it's been classed as a dwarf planet since 2006, the same year that Pluto was demoted from a planet to a dwarf planet. Ceres is about 14 times smaller than Pluto and is the only dwarf planet in the inner solar system. So I did cover Ceres maybe 7 or 8 years ago, and it's just another interesting thing about astronomy, all this variation of what you can see. So this weekend, or actually what means last weekend, Ceres will appear to meet the distant spiral galaxy M100 in the night sky, according to the Virtual Telescope Project, though the two objects will actually be trillions of miles apart. So at the time of the line of sight view, Ceres will be about 150 million miles or 240 million kilometers from Earth, while M100 is at about 55 million light years. Oh, well, what a difference. 150 miles as opposed to 55 million light years. The meeting will take place in the constellation Berenices, just a few days after Ceres opposition, which is when Earth passes it and the Sun. Passes between it and the Sun, so it's opposite to Earth, opposition, cool. That's great news for sky watchers because Ceres only appears 100% illuminated from Earth when close to opposition. It will shine at magnitude 7, which is just out of view of the naked eye. A pair of stargazing binoculars should reveal Ceres, while a good small telescope will also show M100, according to the Virtual Telescope Project. So why didn't I look at that? I am not keeping up on my stargazing like I did years ago. Ceres was discovered by astronomer Giuseppe Piazzi in 1801. Its average distance from Earth is comparable to that of Mars, and its closeness has inspired some researchers to suggest that in the future it could be a target for human habitants. NASA's Dawn spacecraft visited Ceres from 2015 to 2016. Yeah, that's when I covered it, taking some stunning images. M100's spectacular spiral arms host several small black holes, including the youngest one ever observed in our cosmic neighborhood, according to NASA. M100 was discovered by French astronomer Pierre Machin in 1781. So, I did talk a bit about observational things and what happened when I first bought my telescope. Of course, I was so excited and I used it a lot, and sometimes I would use it a lot just to look at Jupiter, and that was good enough. But I also, and Saturn, I looked at Saturn more than I did Jupiter, because Saturn is more awe-inspiring in a telescope. But it's always nice to see the four moons, or three of the moons, and how they align. So sometimes they're on a certain tilt, sometimes the plane is right on us. So stargazing is definitely a wonderful pastime. And I do recall when I went to, could have been the 1980s or 1990s, there was a eclipse. So I went up to, maybe it was Cypress Bowl, and somebody let me use their telescope. Very nice of them. And then I brought my own telescope up to the North Shore quite a few times. And in, I guess it's the Capilano Dam. And right there, it's beautiful. It's quite a difference from the city. You can see a lot more. The night sky is darker, and it is really a beautiful sight. So I also worked in Shanghai at a university, and the students were going on a camping trip, and they brought their telescopes and they were going to go and they invited me, but I didn't want to rough it overnight in China. But as I said, in China, it's a bit different than Canada in that, for example, when I lived in Beijing, you can ask the driver, oh, just drop me off here and you can hike to the Great Wall and not worry a tad or a bit or whatever you want to call it about wild animals attacking you because they're all gone. People have eaten all the wild animals and a lot of the forests are completely depleted. So I don't know where they would have went, but this was outside of Shanghai somewhere to watch. And there's a telescope in Shanghai on one of the busy roads, but I never went to it. So anyway, I'm thinking about taking a break now. So in the first part of the show, I talked about visual astronomy, like observational astronomy, when you're looking at things. And the moon is just a wonderful object to view because if you have telescope or binoculars, you can see the craters, especially the terminator. And when it's at a crescent, when it's a slight moon, it looks very beautiful, very nice. And a person I know said as much as he could during one calendar year, he looked at the moon every night. Of course, you couldn't see much when it was raining, but so the moon is just definitely a beautiful object to be able to study. And one thing I was wondering just now, I guess if you aim the James Webb Space Telescope or Hubble, you can probably get some good views of their moons from around here, but I don't know about that. But it's hard to see any other moons, except when you look at Jupiter, you can see three little dots or four little dots sometimes in a line, in a row. And it's just beautiful how the physical world works out. The moons are all nice in a straight line together. So I'm going to go for a break. And when I come back, I'm going to surprise you guys with a topic, and I'm not sure. It's a random topic, so I'll choose later. Thank you for listening. This is Marco. You are listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
Do you want to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both. Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting. Do you want to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
Okay, welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. I'm here Friday night in the studio, and I believe this show will air on Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. So in the first part, I talked about observational astronomy. Why don't I stick close to our neighborhood and talk about something called a new instrument to track air pollution hourly sheds light on disparities. So this is dated March 30, which is yesterday. So it looks like a little kind of almost like, well, not quite a R2-D2, but it looks like a robot. And here's the picture of this thing. It is called Tempo. Is hosted on a commercial communication satellite, Intersat 406. And I'm sorry, I read that a bit slowly, but the words were just too small. Intelsat 406. Okay. 40E. Okay, I'm sorry about that. So it's Intelsat 40E. Okay, so again, this article is called New Instrument to Track Air Pollution Hourly Sheds Lights on Disparity. And that's what I'm just crazy about NASA. Just generally crazy about NASA. But then when they do stuff like that, do stuff for air pollution and monitor the Earth for certain things, it's just wild, you know. Anyway, here it is. NASA is preparing for the launch of an instrument that will provide new insight into air quality in North America, observing air pollution from space more frequently and in greater detail than previous space-based instruments. It will also reveal disparities in pollution exposure. Cool. The Tropospheric Emissions Monitoring of Pollution Instrument, or TEMPO. I really like these NASA monograms too, is scheduled for an early April launch from Cape Canaveral. So that's going to be, well, next week maybe, Space Force Station. TEMPO is mounted on a commercial communication satellite and will fly in an orbit that allows for hourly daytime observations of air quality in North America. It will observe pollutants down to a resolution of 4 square miles or 10 square kilometers and across an area that stretches from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific and from central Canada to Mexico City. The dishwasher-sized instrument was built by Ball Aerospace and will fly on the Maxar-built Intelsat 40E satellite. Oh, that's good that I remembered. I'm going to interrupt this topic for a minute, but I won't interrupt it for long. There was a show on CBC hosted by Dave Suzuki, something like Destination Mars. It was very good, but it was done in 2016. So it was a bit dated, but still learned a lot from it. Very interesting show. So one day maybe I'll cover parts of what that show was. Anyway, going on with this article. So this article is called New Instrument to Track Air Pollution Hourly Shed Light on Disparities. While efforts over the past 30 years to clean the dirty air that spews from smokestacks and tailpipes have been successful in improving air quality in the U.S., more than 40% of Americans still live and breathe in areas with episodes of poor air quality. And I lived in Shanghai and Beijing, and Beijing is definitely worse in air pollution terms than Shanghai. But when I first lived in Shanghai, I didn't see the sun for 6 months. I could just see the sun as a haze behind the haze in the sky. And finally, one day, it came out without any haze. But yeah, China before had serious pollution problems, still probably has serious pollution problems like the Earth does, but nowhere near as like before. TEMPO will primarily observe three main pollutants, which is nitrogen dioxide, formaldehyde, and ozone. Nitrogen dioxide is a noxious gas released from the burning of fuel that can cause difficulty breathing and exacerbate asthma. And I do recall that the ozone layer was closing, so that's good. Formaldehyde, a byproduct of the breakdown of volatile organic compounds in paint, glue, and gasoline, has health effects that range from eye irritation to cancer. And the other day I walked through a gas station and I could smell the gasoline. And for some reason, it just smells so good. I don't know why. It's poisonous, but I love the smell. And while ozone high in the atmosphere protects us from the sun's harmful ultraviolet rays, ground-level ozone is a main component of smog and is harmful to vegetation and human health. So says Barry Leffer, NASA's program scientist for TEMPO, end quote. This is going to be a really valuable tool for science, but it's also going to be helpful for the general public. It will improve air quality, or our ability to forecast air quality, and also to inform policymakers. And it will be useful for the epidemiologists who want to study the health impacts of air pollution, end quote. The instrument will measure sunlight reflected by Earth's surface and by gases and particles in the atmosphere. That reflected light, both ultraviolet and visible, is projected onto a spectrometer that separates it into different wavelengths. Since different gases have unique fingerprints or spectra, scientists can study the wavelengths of light that are being absorbed and determine the nature and amount of gases in the atmosphere. NASA scientists have been collecting air pollution measurements for more than two decades from low Earth orbit. These satellites have flown in polar orbits, roughly 470 miles or 760 kilometers above the surface, and make observations of most locations on the planet about once per day. And here's another quote from Caroline Nolan, an atmospheric physicist at the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory, end quote. Every day we have been getting measurements over New York City at 1:30 in the afternoon. Where is now? This is confusing me. I am so sorry. But that's just one data point every New York or over New York per day. And we have two rush hours every day that we're not able to capture, end quote. TEMPO and the satellite it rides on will fly at the same rate the Earth rotates and at a fixed spot above the Earth, a position known as a geostationary orbit. This orbit, combined with the satellite's location in the Western Hemisphere, will allow the instrument to focus on North America, scanning from the east to west coast and providing detailed measurement of the entire continent during daylight hours. Another quote from Nolan, end quote, the great thing about TEMPO is that for the first time, we'll be able to take hourly measurements over North America. We'll be able to see what's happening for the whole time that the sun is up, end quote. Because of TEMPO's geostationary orbit and spatial resolution, its data will also shed light on how pollution varies by neighborhood within a city. This will allow people to use the data to examine issues of environmental justice, said John Haynes, TEMPO program applications lead at NASA headquarters in Washington. And so says John Haynes, in quote, we've known that oil refineries or chemical plants tend to be situated in lower income neighborhoods. One of the reasons that property values are lower is due to poor air quality, but we've never had ground-based monitors stationed in every neighborhood to confirm it, end quote. With TEMPO, Haynes said, we'll be able to show these differences and disparities for all the major cities in North America. TEMPO will join the Geostationary Environment Monitoring Spectrometer, GEMS, or GEMS instrument, aboard South Korea's GEOKOMPSAT-2B. So GEO-KOMPSAT-2B satellite and ESA, or the European Space Agency's upcoming Sentinel-4, to form a large constellation of satellites that monitor air quality in Europe and Asia as well. Kelly Chance, a scientist at the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory, is the principal investigator for TEMPO. The project team is based at NASA's Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia, and the data will be distributed by NASA's Atmospheric Science Data Center, also at Langley. So that was a nice article. And I did see something on NASA TV a couple months ago that NASA is now planning for the future. So they are building their observatories, their laboratories, their offices on 8-foot high bases of concrete, because they figure if the sea levels rise, they could rise to 1 foot, 2 feet, 5 feet, or 8 feet. So I believe they're building a lot of their things on eight foot high, or maybe even higher, concrete bases to avoid damage from rising sea levels. So here there's a map, and it shows TEMPO looking over North America, Sentinel-4 is looking over Europe, and GEMS looking over a lot of Asia. So I didn't know South Korea was that involved in the astronaut business, but in the astronomy business, but it does seem that they are. So, as I say, I always respect NASA for a lot of things. One of the things is for the work they do for protecting Earth. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. I'm going to go on my second break. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
About 40% of UBC students experience food insecurity. Sprouts is hosting a weekly produce market from 10:30 to 1:30 every Monday in the Life Building. With produce from local farms, students are free to take whatever they want. Sprouts Cafe is open from Monday to Thursday and is offering 30 free meals a day, completely free and no questions asked. They also host Community Eats, a completely free hot lunch that is open for all. Stop by and support the Sprouts cause for sustainable, accessible food at UBC.
Okay, so welcome back. This is Marco. I'm going to stay with the Earth and our general area of our general solar system. And here is one that is important, not so important for other parts of the solar system, but for Earth is. The article is called NASA Enabled AI, so I assume that's artificial intelligent predictions may give time to prepare for solar storms. So if there is, what I understand, if there is time to prepare, some things can be prepared on a short-term basis. But sometimes, like, for example, I think this is what happens, that there's a big solar storm. It can knock out all the transformers and things like that. So those have to have a long-term preparation period, because if those are knocked out, you got to replace them, and it's going to mean hell for us here on Earth. So we have to take a long-term approach to preparing, hardening the transformers so they don't get fried by a solar storm. So I guess this is a short-term thing, where the article, again, is called NASA-enabled AI predictions may give time to prepare for solar storms. So if a solar storm is coming, maybe that could be broadcast, but I don't know how you could prepare short term. Maybe this article will tell me, but long-term preparation is also needed. Like in Texas, I believe it was last year, last winter, it was so cold it froze out some of the power grids and people froze and there was flooding and all this stuff. And this happened before in the previous storm, I believe it was something like 2006 or 2008, where things froze over. And then the power company said, okay, now we got time to prepare, harden our electrical facilities, but they didn't. So when the storm hit again, they were zonked again. They were in the cold. They didn't have heat or power. So hopefully they're preparing. So some of these things take a long-term preparation. And I hope something is done for that, because like what happened in Quebec that time, I don't know how long ago it was, but it fried some of the a tornado siren for life-threatening storms in America's heartland, a new computer model that combines artificial intelligence, AI, and NASA satellite data could sound the alarm for dangerous space weather. Oh, transformer, that's what I was looking at. Okay. The model uses AI to analyze spacecraft measurements of solar wind, an unrelenting stream of materials from the sun, and predict where an impending solar storm will strike, anywhere on Earth, with 30 minutes of advance warning. This could provide just enough time to prepare for these storms and prevent severe impacts on power grids and other critical infrastructure. So I'm wondering, I thought, for example, in a power grid or transformers, there has to be a long-term preparation period where if they're hardened, these things that could be destroyed by a solar storm, they have to be hardened now. So it could take years to harden them. And then when the solar storm all of a sudden pops up on us, then this kind of equipment will be able to take the hit. So let's see what they say short term, because here they're talking 30 minutes advance notice. So here's a beautiful picture of the sun. NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory captured this image of a solar flare on October 2, 2014. The solar flare is the bright flash of light at top, a burst of solar material erupting out into space can be seen just to the right of it. So yeah, that's wow. It's something else, these storms. The sun constantly, here's the article again. So I'm going to read the article. NASA enabled AI predictions may give time to prepare for solar storms. The sun constantly sheds solar material into space, both in a steady flow known as the solar wind and in shorter, more energetic bursts from solar eruptions. When the solar material strikes Earth's magnetic environment, its magnetosphere, it sometimes creates so-called geomagnetic storms. The impacts of these magnetic storms can range from mild to extreme, but in a world increasingly dependent on technology, the effects are growing ever more disruptive. Okay, so I read that, but I just read it again. For example, a destructive solar storm in 1989 caused electrical blackouts across Quebec for 12 hours, plunging millions of Canadians into dark and closing schools and businesses. The most intense solar storm on record, the Carrington event in 1859, sparked fires at telegraph stations and prevented messages from being sent. If the Carrington event happened today, it would have even more severe impacts, such as widespread electrical disruptions, persistent blackouts, and interruptions to global communications. Such technological chaos could cripple economies and endanger the safety and livelihoods of people worldwide. So as I'm talking, I mentioned earlier, I do believe there are efforts to long-term safety measures, but I don't know what type of efforts. We'll see what they say here. In addition, the risk of geomagnetic storms and devastating effects on our society is presently increasing as we approach the next solar maximum, a peak in the sun's 11-year activity cycle, which is expected to arrive sometime in 2025. Okay, so here is a movie here. This movie captured by NASA's Solar and Heliospheric Observatory, SOHO. Oops, sorry. Sorry, the page moved. Shows two eruptions from the sun called coronal mass ejections, which blasted charged particles into space on October 26 and 29, 2003. Some of these high-energy particles hit SOHO's camera, creating what looks like snow particles. These blasts were part of a string of solar storms around Halloween of that year, which triggered a blackout in Sweden and caused disruptions to communications, aircraft, and spacecraft, including SOHO. In SOHO's view, a disc blocks direct light from the sun so that the fainter features near it can be seen, while the white circle represents the location and size of the sun. So I highly recommend to look at this article just for the photos. It's called NASA Enabled AI Predictions May Give Time to Prepare for Solar Storms on NASA.gov, and it's dated March 30, 2023. To help, now back to the article, to help prepare an international team of researchers at the Frontier Development Lab, a public-private partnership that includes NASA, the U.S. Geological Survey, and the U.S. Department of Energy, have been using artificial intelligence, or AI, to look for connections between the solar wind and geomagnetic disruptions, or perturbations that cause havoc on our technology. The researchers applied an AI method called deep learning, which trains computers to recognize patterns based on previous examples. They use this type of AI to identify relationships between solar wind measurements from heliophysics missions, including ACE, WIND, IMP-3, and GeoTail, and geomagnetic perturbations observed at ground stations across the planet. From this, they developed a computer model called DAGGER, formerly Deep Learning Geomagnetic Perturbation, that can quickly and accurately predict geomagnetic disturbances worldwide 30 minutes before they occur. According to the team, the model can produce predictions in less than a second, and the predictions update every minute. That's pretty quick. The DAGGER team tested the model against two geomagnetic storms that happened in August 2011 and March 2015. In each case, DAGGER was able to quickly and accurately forecast the storm's impacts around the world. But I myself am wondering what type of short-term preparations can be done to prepare for a geomagnetic storm that is about to hit you. It's strange. What can they do? Previous prediction models have used AI to produce local geomagnetic forecasts for specific locations on Earth. Other models that didn't use AI have provided global predictions that weren't very timely. DAGGER is the first one to combine the swift analysis of AI with real measurements from space and across Earth to generate frequently updated predictions that are both prompt and precise for sites worldwide. And here's a couple of maps. So they're maps of map of Supermag target and FDI forecast for time step with mean MAE. I don't know what this means, but there's a graph here that says horizontal magnetic field, and then it shows a 30-minute forecast, and it says here DAGGER's developers compared the model's prediction to measurements made during solar storms in August 2011 and March 2015. At the top, colored dots show measurements made during the 2011 storm. So there's dots. So there's a bunch of dots. I don't know what they mean. Colors indicate the intensity of geomagnetic perturbations that can induce currents in electrical grids, with orange and red indicating the strongest effects. Okay, this is in black and white. Or, no, it's a bit of red, but still, it's not very clear what this is talking about. Dagger's 30-minute forecast for the same time, bottom, shows the most intense perturbations in approximately the same locations around Earth's North Pole. So it shows like a big cloud, or, and this first target is dots, so I'm not sure. I'm sorry. I can't explain this. So there's a graph here, horizontal magnetic field perturbations, and what's the unit in, there's the del sign, and B sub H, so that's a magnetic field, and in N Teslas, so nano Teslas maybe. Okay, that's pretty cool. So says Vishal Upendran of the Inter-University Center for Astronomy and Astrophysics in India, who is the lead author of a paper about the Dagger model published in the journal Space Weather, end quote. With this AI, it is now possible to make rapid and accurate global predictions and inform decisions in the event of a solar storm, thereby minimizing or even presenting devastation to modern society. So it says to make rapid and accurate global predictions and inform decisions in the event of a solar storm, thereby minimizing or even presenting devastation to modern society. So what kind of information, if something's going to hit you in 30 minutes, how do you mitigate the effects? What do you do to prepare for this? I really don't know. The computer code in the Dagger model is open source, and according to Upendran, it could be adopted with help by power grid operators, satellite controllers, telecommunication companies, and others to apply the predictions for their specific needs. Such warnings could give them time to take action to protect their assets and infrastructure from an impending solar storm, such as temporarily taking sensitive systems offline or moving satellites to different orbits to minimize damage. Okay, so there they finally said, this is how you can minimize damage, so you can take actions to protect your assets. So one of them was the temporarily taking sensitive systems offline or moving satellites to different orbits to minimize different damage. Now I know. Okay, that's nice that they told me and they told us. With models like Dagger, there could one day be solar storm sirens that sound an alarm in power stations and satellite control centers around the world, just as tornado sirens wail in advance of threatening terrestrial weather in towns and cities across America. Okay, so now I know. Isn't that beautiful? Now I know what they can do to prepare for this. So why don't I do this? Let's see how much time I have left. Oh, I'm out of time. So I'm going to wrap this up because I was going to look at the Carrington event, see how strong it was. But anyway, why not just wrap it up, because I'm getting to my time limit. So thank you for listening. This has been Marco. I have talked about things in our neighborhood. Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a great weekend, but you'll hear this on Monday, so have a great week. Goodbye.
CITR 101.9.
CITR 101.9 FM.
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 CITR, Voices of UBC.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of The Real World. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sá, talking to you from the CITR station at UBC Point Grey campus, located in the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. This week, we have a very special episode for all of you, and that is the case because I am once again joined by the incredible, the amazing Lily Groh. Say hello, Lily.
Hello.
Hell yeah. Okay, so for those of you who have been tuning in to all of our weekly episodes, you know that we are currently doing